Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to the Work For It podcast on the Makery Network. I'm Brian House.
And I'm Ben Butler. And together we represent the two most important components of the maker world.
I work the steel.
And I work the wood.
And I'm Brian Cohn from B-Cone Knives. I'm a young maker, and I work both.
The show's primary focus is business in the workshop, and then we reach out to you on social media with a question every week.
We read your answers and then discuss them on the show.
Follow our show on any major podcast platform and on Instagram at workforit.podcast, or you can support us for as little as $1 a month on patreon.com/workforit. Let's get on with the show.
Do it.
Yes,
okay,
sir. Let's go.
Work For It podcast right here on the Makery Network. Welcome to your hour and a half of crazy business workshop talk. I'm joined, as always, with my two favorite podcasting people, Mr. Benjamin Butler and Brian Cohn of B-Cone Knives. How you guys
doing?
What
up, guys? Fantastic.
Going on. It's a great day. It's a good day.
Ben, you sound like you just got out of like the laboratory and you're like, listen, I may have inhaled some of this weird chemical that I was manufacturing in my studio.
You weren't supposed to smoke that stuff. Whoa.
Oh, shoot.
Well, hey, listen, real quick, I want to dive right in because teased this a couple of days ago. But I've had in my mind floating around this concept of a marking knife, kind of an all around shop, scalpel shop, sort of box cutter, all utility knife. And I wanted to make it out of some really durable material. And so yesterday, we just had like this major weather event here, which was a tropical storm, which really wasn't that major. Okay. So in terms of people who live in Florida, unless it's like a Cat 3 or a Cat 4 and
right,
it's making a direct landfall right where you are, you're not going to really be affected too much by anything less than that.
The House family was not fazed by that little pussy storm going by.
Listen, look, here's what happens. It gives us all an excuse to not work and like drink and like hang out. Hey. We call them hurricane parties. You know, we do that kind of thing and watch the storms go by because really you shouldn't be out driving in it. It's kind of like a snowstorm. It's like the equivalent of a snowstorm. So yesterday I had all this time. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be shooting any footage for the YouTube channel or Instagram because you can't really. I work under a metal roof, and with the rain and the wind, you just can't hear anything. So I decided to prototype the Work For It shop scalpel. Okay.
Yes,
this
sir.
Is what I'm going to call it. And the reason is because typically a marking knife, someone mentioned to me, and I didn't even think about this, But
what the heck was that?
Ben's blowing some shit up over there. So somebody said if you're gonna your phone is blowing up, turn
good.
It down.
We're
turn
muted.
It down. All right. And they were like, you know, if it's a traditional marking knife, it would only have a bevel on one side so that you know, the knife would ride along a straight edge on the flat side. So that's not typically what I want this thing to be. I really want it to be kind of like an all-around shop knife that you would keep.
If you go,
I don't know how many times a day I grab my box cutter, but you guys must grab your box cutters and not different knives like almost every day, right? Yeah. Like you're cutting things open.
Well, I grab my B-cone shop scalpel, but
yes, sir.
But I think you're right. You know, if you have a single bevel on it, it's not that it's necessarily limited in some way, you know, because you could still use a single bevel knife to cut freaking cardboard boxes, but...
Sure, yeah.
But here's the problem with that single bevel. If you're putting it up against something, it's really good to get up, like, to mark across an edge. But if you're trying to cut a straight line without anything to cut against...
It's a pain in the
it
ass.
It just completely, you know, slips to the right or the left, depending on which bevel it is, so...
You are right. Yeah. You are right, yeah. But you're right, Brian. I grab... You know, for, well, I have the Jocko whatever maker knife.
Yeah.
And that's typically what I carry. And I love it because it's a disposable blade. But the only reason I love that it's a disposable blade is because I don't have a super durable knife, you know, that doesn't need sharpening every other freaking day, you know? So I think targeting that end is good.
So you're saying you need a really durable shop knife, huh? I wonder what's coming down the pike.
And I'm finally getting it together. I've been using.
I don't know if you've ever heard of A2 tool steel. So it's a very durable, tough steel, and they use it to make all kinds of tooling, hence the name tool steel. Mm-hmm. But I've got a whole bunch of this. And I got it like really inexpensively, and it's been kind of like hanging out in my shop in big sheets. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? This would be the perfect material to make these little knives out of. And what a better way to also include our audience in assisting us in buying new podcasting equipment, because we want to buy a Rodecaster. We want to buy some new microphones and headphones and other things that will make our podcast sound, look, and be more sort of brought into the future. Like, you know, sound effects. Brian would be able to do sound effects and cut in, like, say, clips of YouTube videos and things like that. If we had these devices, we would be able to do these things. Yeah. These things are all very expensive. So, like, to give you a frame of reference, I think we need, like, about $1,000, maybe more, to kind of bring us up into the 21st century. Yep. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to make 10 of these. Actually, we're going to make 14 of these knives. There's going to be 10 that are going to go up for sale. And I teased it yesterday, and I think I have almost half of them sold already. So people
talk
are like,
Pickle,
how much are those?
I'm like, talk to Tobin. He's been having a lot of luck with the auctions, he tells us.
Yeah.
Auctions are definitely a cool way to go. I've never done an auction, so I thought, you know what? Yeah. Why not throw $100 a pop on these things?
Yeah.
And then have all of us, you, me, and you, myself, Ben, and Brian, all will have a hand in on the actual manufacturing of it, whether it be maybe like a little leather pouch. I was thinking, Ben, you could maybe make little leather sleeves for them. And Brian, you know, the first iteration of this, it looks really a lot like a scalpel. The second iteration, which I shared with Brian this morning, it's less scalpel-y and more kind of like a utility knife. It's got holes in it. It's going to be a little bit more, little bigger handle, a little bit easier to wield. But it will be made out of this super tough tool steel that we will heat treat right here in the workshop. And then I'll put an edge on it. And then it's going to be... All 10 of them are going to have numbers. So 1 through 10.
Yep.
And then they'll never be made again. So this is going to be, there's going to be 10 of these knives made, and that's it. We take the DXF file
Love it.
And crumple it up and throw it in the trash. So there's only 10 of these. So here's an idea. How we're going to sell them, but I mean, people have already been messaging me. In fact, somebody's already PayPal'd me $100.
No kidding.
Just like out of the blue.
Thank you, there we go.
Yeah. So.
So here's an idea. So we're going to do, you said 14 of them, 10 for sale, one for all three of us. What's the last one going to?
The last one is going to go, I think, for a year-end sort of holiday giveaway. So okay, at the cool, end cool. of the year, yeah, I was thinking we would do projects like this maybe every other month or something. I know we're halfway through the year. Mm-hmm. But if we did something like this and then at the end of the year, we had like a giveaway where we just, for somebody who could use some tools or some tooling, we're going to throw a bunch of stuff in a box and ship it off to one lucky winner at the end.
I love that idea. That's awesome. Nice.
Yeah. And I'll bring up too, I was thinking about this actually this morning. I had a nice early workshop session this morning, my favorite time to be out in the shop.
Nice and cool in there, I bet.
Oh, man. And it's weird because now we're past the summer solstice, right? So now we're losing daylight already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I'm going, when the hell's the sun coming up? It's like, it's crazy how fast it switches. Boise sits on the far western edge of the time zone as well. So we've kind of got that going for us. And then we've got,
so you
know,
could
our,
potentially be Pacific time.
Yeah. 40 miles to the Oregon border. Yeah. And you know, you're there.
Interesting.
So we are blessed in June to where it is darn near 11:15 before it's dark some nights.
Wow.
But it's really strange and it stays twilight forever and ever and ever. But now, yeah, we're starting to go the other way. You know, we used to celebrate the 4th of July as a kid, like the kickoff to summer. And then when you get old, it's like, yeah, fucking summer's almost over.
Send the kids back to school. It's time to go. Go back.
But I was thinking, I'm gonna get a hold of our patrons as well. And I'm going to put together some stuff for our patrons and get that out to them.
So somebody brought that up, actually. They were like, can you offer these to the patrons first? And we definitely are. So we'll give you guys, you're a patron, you're going to get the right
to sign up to
refusal.
Be a patron. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Now's your time to jump on that. Hit us up on the Work For It podcast patron. And if you want a first dib at this thing, you better jump on that quick.
Yeah, for as little as $1 a month, right? So it's $12 a year, and you can support what we do. And
we
produce content every week. Every single week we make a piece of content that hopefully you enjoy and get something out of. So $12 a year is actually a very small amount of money, I think. And it gets you're gonna have opportunities to buy into these little runs of things that we do. Because here's what I've discovered doing this process, even since last night. People don't really care what it is. I mean, it is useful, you know, but they want to support what we're doing. They're all about it, but they want an exchange. They're, you know, the content is good, but we give it away, right? Mm-hmm. We give that to everyone.
I've
it doesn't matter who you
cool,
are.
I've seen some cool patron rewards. I always forget the names, but We Built a Thing is another podcast name. Can't you tell that I work at home alone?
Right. You listen to a lot of podcasts.
We Built a Thing is a podcast. Bruce Ulrich and some other Drew Fisher, Fisher's Shop on YouTube, and Mark Christ. They do a podcast, but they actually had commemorative coins made. And they were really, really cool. Yeah. I was like, whoa. But
and those coins are big business. I've noticed that. People collect these things.
A lot of military
guys. And buy them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never seen, for me, a coin doesn't really do it for me. But a small knife, I would definitely buy a small knife. And just because there's so much utility and the fact that it's numbered and it's going to have our DNA all over it.
We can throw a cutting board out.
By DNA, I mean, you know, spit shine. It'll be something that, you know, we all had a part in and they'll be able to have in their hands and utilize. And it's what's kind of cool is my laser etcher was able to transfer the logo really
that was
cool. Crazy,
yeah,
right?
Detailed too, man. Like, awesome.
For as small as, to give you guys a frame of reference, that is just over 5 millimeters wide. So that's how much detail. Yeah.
So those tons letters have to be like half a freaking millimeter. That's like
they're maybe a millimeter,
hair.
I think.
I'm looking at a picture of it. It looks as if it's a relatively deep etch as well. I don't know if that's just
type of laser, man. That's
man.
So someday
I'm gonna have one of those laser etchers. Holy cow, those things are nice.
It is very cool. This is my third iteration of this knife, and there'll be a fourth and maybe a fifth, depending on, because I'm trying to break down the process of making this as simple and easy as possible that I can replicate over and over. But the first time I did the etch, I did it before heat treat, which was a mistake. You know, it should have, I should have definitely done it after heat treat, because once you heat treat something, it makes the etch almost like blurry. It's not quite as good of quality, you know.
It's just the chemical makeup of the steel changes in such a way where it's just not conducive to burning off, probably. Huh?
Yes, in this case, A2 tool steel has so much carbon in it, and what happens is the carbon leaches and it's eaten away on the outside. Now, you know, I have that fancy dancy kiln with all that cool argon flood and everything. And that actually does help a lot. But the 10 seconds from when I pull it from the kiln and put it in my plate quench, it decarbs like a lot. So it's really
getting like ash built up probably with the laser.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Reburns. Yeah. So you burn it after with the fact, and then you buff it, and it looks like what you saw in the photos, and it's just it's so cool looking. So if you can imagine that with the number and maybe our signatures or initials or something next to it, and that will be
Here's what I was thinking about the initials. We could do like a B House, B Butler, B Cone.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, we need to abbreviate it just slightly.
Yeah,
because I think our full signatures is going to be tough to put on that.
Oh, for sure. So
yeah.
Anyhow, I don't want to get off on a tangent on that.
Great
but
idea.
I definitely think it's going to go over well. So if you want to get your own work for it, scalpel, we're going to do a run of 10. We could probably do a run of 30 and sell them all, but we're only going to do 10 for this first run. Yeah. And then we'll list them up. And what will happen is how I'll list them. Is I'm going to offer them to the patrons first. I'm going to give them a few days to mull it over. If they decide they want one, great. They can buy in. If not, then I'll put them up on the website and then let everybody just have at it and buy
free
them that
all.
Way.
Sounds good.
I like it. Well, maybe anyways, in the future, we'll look at like a cutting board or something. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, with that Shape Oco you have, or ShopBot you have, you could do some pretty cool stuff, man.
Some really cool shapes. I've been cutting out some cool shapes.
Do the work for it logo right into cutting under a cutting board.
Yeah. Check
there
your mail.
And then every time you're making dinner, you'd be like,
show up in the mail.
Wait a minute. Check my mail? Hold on a second.
I don't know.
Am I getting a gift, Ben?
If I get this
recording
done.
Oh my God!
Maybe I've been having lots of time.
Don't get my hopes
up,
man.
I got lots of time to play. I got a really long list of stuff that the boss left for me, but you know the boss isn't coming home for a while yet, so I got lots of time to do the boss's list.
There you go.
Meanwhile, the grass is dying. Flowers have been dead for a month, and
that can all go to the wayside. That's fine.
House looks like a trailer park outside of Glacier National Park.
Oh shoot,
these are Idaho jokes. See, I'm not getting these jokes. I don't have any frame of reference.
Well, is Glacier National Park
like a dump or something? Like, what's going
on? Glacier's an interesting place because it sits, you know, it's far north in that sort of northern part of the world.
I don't even know where it is. Where is Glacier National Park?
Montana.
In
Montana. Gotcha. And it just kind of sits in a spot where there's just not much around it. So like the park becomes the city and the attraction and the, you know, it brings all the good and all the bad.
Ah, so yes.
You know how you get like the circusization of our national parks? You know, like Edward Abbey was a big author back in the 60s, I think it was, who had a pretty strong passion for our national park system becoming a more primitive, more primitive system. He believed nobody should be able to drive through a national park. You would have to walk through it or be provided a shuttle ride on a bus so that you could minimize impact. And, you know,
this sounds all very exhausting.
Yeah, it is. So he was always complaining, and Glacier is probably the place I've seen it the quote worst. Is as soon as you exit the park, you know, there's Wally World and Bear World and Moose World, and you know, come see the freaking cobra snakes and, you know, dancing girls and cowboy shootouts and the whole bit, you know, like
they've got the mixture of roadside attractions.
Yeah. Wild West. That's what these areas do. Barnum and Bailey and Boomtown.
Yeah. Yeah. Forget about it. I'm telling you, man, here's once you go out and you see all those places and you explore America, you know, and the further I get into my older age, I realize there's just no place like home. Like, I really like being home and in my workshop. I like working. I like exploring the world via the internet and pretty much everything else other than sailing. I'm a big sailor and I love to sail. So if it's on a boat and it's near the water, then I'll do that. But, you know, pretty much everything else can go, go take a hike. Anyhow, all right, listen, real quick, let's switch gears real fast. Let's talk. I'd like to know, Brian, what do you got going on in your workshop this week?
So I'm actually finishing up my batch of knives that I was working on last week. So right now I've got it to the point of just working on, I'm right now shaping up the handles. So I've got, I think I'm up to through 120 grit. So I'm doing 220 grit next. So I've been working on this batch of knives. Past that, most of my time, because it's been so damn hot, I was actually working on setting up my website for the first time, which I'm super excited about. Just going to plug it real quick. BeconKnives.com is mine.
Nice.
So
I
go ahead.
I checked it out last night. It's really nice. You did a great job with it.
I don't know if I'm exactly happy with it quite yet. I still want to do a couple more pages. I still need to set up a few of the back end things so I can actually sell what's there. I've got one. Go ahead, Ben.
Go ahead. Yo, you finish. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I've got one 5-inch chopper up there so far. That was actually, if you remember, a couple weeks ago, I was talking about a lady that wasn't, you know, picking up her knife. It had been a month or so. I finally, you know, dropped the hammer. It's like, hey, you know, if it's still here in a week, I'm gonna go ahead and sell it. So, hey, it's up for sale. So that one's up right now. I have more to take decent pictures of to put up as listings. I'm super excited about it. Nice. I guess being a person who's never put together a website, or I'm not really all that savvy on the computer. So this was just literally hours and hours of just clicking around and seeing what buttons do. So,
it's interesting because what I was going to say earlier is that I think what some folks maybe don't realize is that like somewhere around 90% of creating any website is the content, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've helped people build websites in the past and built a bunch of websites. And what it comes down to is that, you know, oftentimes the developer gets stalled out because people can't get content to them. It's like, I can make your website look pretty as the day is long, but you've still got to tell me what goes on it. Right. So I often, and there are a number of them online, Squarespace and others probably have something similar, but they're just checklists, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's get together photos, get together, write an introductory paragraph, write a paragraph about yourself, about, you know, a bio for the About Us page, write three sentence descriptions for every product you want to sell, make sure you have pricing for every product you want to sell. You know, like on and on and on and on and on. So I think if folks are considering taking the leap and making a website, that's like, I would start there. Don't even worry about who you're going to build it on, you know, what you're going to build it on and how much it costs and all that. You know, once you have that content, man, then you can crank it together.
You're good to go. See,
so you went with which provider?
Squarespace. Okay. Yeah, Brian totally talked me into Squarespace. It seems like a pretty decent website setup for your money. So I have an idea for a page, and I haven't figured out how I'm going to set it up yet. Basically, I want one of those dropdowns to be basically set up your custom order. And, you know, my 30 to 45 minute conversation with people is, okay, what steel do you want? What materials do you want? What color liners do you want? Yada, yada, yada. So I want to set up like some sort of a, you know, dropdown something where you can go through and pick all of your different options and the different price points and the pros and cons.
Okay. Oh, like a comparison thing almost. I see.
I think this is an excellent idea, Brian. Yeah. And here's the reason why. You want to remove all customer interaction as much as possible.
Now,
and
Brian, didn't Craig do that? I thought Craig knife tool.
Here's what I'm gonna say, and this isn't gonna be a very popular opinion, but this is also gonna be a hot take, but it's also the truth. Is that people will love to waste your time. They will will talk and they will they will waste your time and then they won't buy anything and whatever else.
I can't tell you. Literally, I get 10 conversations where I go through the entire process between 20 and 45 minutes of, you know, truly customizing, tailoring this knife to somebody, and only one out of those 10 will actually buy it. Right. And it's so much time. I don't want to say wasted, but
No, it is. It is. And the same goes, you know, that's why I am very hesitant about hitting refresh on my little Facebook ad, right? It's because I know that I'm going to get 15 Boise State University students, you know, who've been watching HGTV for the past 6 months going, oh, that's a really cool table. How much would that be? You know, like $400
You know, and if it was just
like for the glue,
if it was just the conversation of, hey, how much is that? This much.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. But the problem is you have to go through to the nth degree and then, you know,
Brian, real quick, let me tell you. I don't know if you've been on Florentine Kitchen Knives website, but Tomer Botner, he's in Barcelona, Spain. He makes some of the coolest knives.
Oh, I've seen his stuff. It's very talented.
Amazing work, right? He has the workflow down pat. And if you look at his website, you can see he's doing exactly what you've described. You can pick your steel. You can pick your handle material, your shape, all of these things. And then at the end, you get a price. It tallies it for you. And I think that that's such a fantastic concept because – I've done custom work. I did tons of it. And I just, by far the most exhausting, most difficult part is dealing with the customer. And if you can automate that process and then, or you can say, if you're looking for something that I don't offer, here's my contact form, shoot me an email. I never give anyone my phone number because people will call me and annoy me with questions that are already listed on the website. And people go, well, can I just, I need to call you to discuss this. No, I'm sorry.
People
you can type it out into an email.
Years ago.
Dude.
Know, we don't talk to people now.
And literally, if you call my cell phone, it says, I never check my voicemail, hang up and dial a different number because I don't ever listen to them. And I know that sounds like me being an asshole, and a little bit of it is. But here's my argument for this. You're the asshole for wasting my time. You're the asshole for not reading and doing your own research. You're being lazy, and I'm sorry, but not going to be
what
my
I
problem.
Would say,
you know,
my biggest, you know, I worked on a project once where, and this was a web app that did a bunch of wildfire modeling. So we try to predict where the fires went, basically, or where they were going to go. So you could say whether or not the town would burn down. on the very landing.
There's an algorithm
page.
For this.
Oh yeah, there is. It's incredible. Wow. There's a whole fire lab that studies it, and it's so.
There's a 43% chance that your town will be burnt to the ground October 12th, 2022.
Well, let me put it this way. It's so random that the algorithm for it was developed back in the 60s.
Come on.
And they've been unable to make any meaningful forward progress on making
ever
it
since.
More accurate.
Probably yeah. because it's so simple. They probably have like
it's simple to a degree. Some of it's data limitations and data access.
They got a guy wandering around yeah. with like a matchbook but, going, there's a 100% chance today that right. your town is going to burn
it's
down.
Right here it's going to burn.
And runs away. I predicted it. My algorithm
shit,
is
these
working.
Wires are everywhere.
It works. Your town did, in fact, burn down. Yeah, but you are the one
you
lit
the
on fire,
dumbass. Come on.
Put out my cigar. Never.
Well, if but there would be an algorithm that would determine whether or not a customer will waste your time. I
put
would sure hope that somebody figured. Yeah, exactly. Put your phone number down
page.
In it. It's like 99.9%.
That's what yeah. we did, right? So on the landing page, the login screen that every person that used the application needed to go to, there was 16 ways to contact the 16 different parties that were involved in supporting the application. And anytime it took 3 seconds longer to complete a run than it should have, guess who got the phone calls? All 16 freaking people. And one day I said, I was like, we were redesigning we were just doing an overhaul, nothing to the back end, but just all front end work, make it look pretty, you know, putting lipstick on the old pig. And I said, have we ever considered, just a thought, you know, maybe instead of putting all that information literally there, we at least make them click one click deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have hard numbers, but I guarantee it cut the calls in half. I mean,
oh, sure. Yeah.
It's okay yeah. to make it a little hard for people to actually reach out and talk to you or message you or, you know, at least in the beginning, I think.
I'm all about the messaging system. In fact, Brian, yeah. I don't know if Squarespace has this option, but if they have that messaging system option, you should enable it. Mm-hmm. I know on my side, Shopify actually offers it. It's kind of
no.
Like
a,
yeah,
you
you're
do
using
Shopify.
Squarespace. I
Son
use
of a,
Shopify.
No.
I was a little confused
no.
as to what you were talking about because no,
that's
I use
good,
Shopify.
Though. Now you guys can compare.
Here's the thing though.
No.
I've heard awesome things about Squarespace. Don't shit
I've
your
heard,
pants just yet.
Yeah,
I think you're
things.
Gonna be fine, and I think don't worry about it. So. I knew you would find out eventually, so I was like, well, when is he going to learn that
Let
I don't
down
actually use Squarespace? But
so you did it on
a
the
lot
podcast,
of makers
my
do.
Man.
Hey,
make some content
listen,
out of this.
I did not plan for this. Look, you know,
oh
hey.
What did I do?
It's okay. Don't worry
this
about
is
it.
Too funny.
Ben is losing his shit. He can't.
Oh shit!
But here's the thing, right?
It's an honest mistake.
You're literally like
they don't really sound that much alike. Shopify, Squarespace, they do begin with an
listen,
S. Both of them.
The
do.
Kings of doing this though, like if you could, it's not like you chose like roll your own WordPress versus Shopify. You
right.
know, like
yeah,
you've got the leading competitors in the market.
Yeah.
This just
and I'm
proves
sure one.
This just proves
other.
That you don't have to be too smart to make knives. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, man. You don't have to be too smart to make websites either. Look what you just did it.
Well, it'll be interesting to do a side by side comparison.
I think it's going to be cool, honestly.
Yeah.
I do.
No, I think so too. And here's the reason why, Brian. I've often thought there's limitations to Shopify that I wish weren't there. But I feel yeah. like I'm so married to the platform now because I've got all my stuff on there that I'm
sure,
like, yeah. well. So it'd be kind of cool to hear your perspective. I think this would be really good also for the audience because a lot of people are setting up websites for their stuff too. So, yeah. hey, man.
Sure.
And
at the
I
end of the day.
Definite positive.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, right, a website is nothing but a bunch of text files. And
right.
so, you know, at the end of the day.
Maybe your website is.
Porting over, you know, like images and stuff. But Maybe there'll be a way to package it all up. I don't know. I roll my own, so I don't know. I won't give me much help.
Well, see, these are shopping carts with, like, you know, credit card processing and database and variants and all, you know, when people go, oh, I want to sell something online. It's like, man, don't try to write an e-commerce site on your own. Yeah. It's really difficult.
Your own. It's a pain.
So, Brian, you've been working on your website. Any other projects that you have, any actual, you know, like, are you making anything that new that we don't know about?
I mean, I just have done some, videos. I mean, I made a flay knife, and I've been working on the forge. Am I forgetting something?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I know you did. You were working on like a Damascus project, but there were some issues with that, and you weren't really sure if we were going to talk about it or not.
Oh yeah, of course. So this past weekend, I guess the weekend before that, actually, I was putting together some YouTube videos. One of them was a flay knife, which turned out absolutely perfect, exactly the way that I was envisioning it when I first started. Actually, it came out ultra flexible. It's way more flexible than anything I've ever made before. On the other hand, I did some Damascus. Hey. So on the other hand, I forged some Damascus that I got from Timber Tiger Forge. So he is a guy out in Oregon. So I paid for one piece of Damascus and he sent me three. Cool dude. Oh, fantastic guy.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. He also battles fires, or maybe he's working in the timber. I mean, it would make sense. His name is Timber Tiger Forge, but he works in the timber industry.
I just heard his name on
Hustle
Knife
and Grind
Talk
podcast. Maybe.
Yeah, that's, I think it was.
He's been talked about a couple times there, and that's how I got a hold of him. But anyways, cool. So he sent me a couple pieces, and I grabbed one and was making a video forging it out, and I spent like 6.5 hours forging on this thing, and then I heat treated it, pulled it out of the oven, and it delaminated in two spots. So
you and I, Brian, we talked about this briefly, and
yes,
we definitely think it was a forge welding issue.
Yes,
when the Damascus was made, not that you had done anything wrong. Right. Delams, when you get a delamination that far into the project, it's most likely it started.
I actually talked to Timber Tiger Forge a little bit about it, and turns out the piece that I worked on, the reason why he sent it to me is because it's been sitting on his shelf for a couple years. It was one of the first 10 pieces of Damascus he's ever forge welded together. So it was an old piece. He was still pretty new in the process, so it just happened to be the one that I decided to film on, which is a shame. But actually, it turned out kind of okay because I did some what I'm calling exploratory surgery on it. Basically, I just ground away at those on those D-lams until it basically, you know, those cracks went away. And there's still enough material there to make an offset serrated bread knife. So
it's not
the 8-inch chef knife that I had to start off with, but you know, luckily it wasn't for a customer. It was I was actually making it for my video guy, Kyle, and you know, it's just going to kind of turn into a new project now. So that video is going to start off with a chef knife and end with a bread knife, which, you know, is okay.
So yeah. I'm curious, while you were filming, was Kyle there when you discovered the delamination?
Oh yeah, of course. And okay, like,
so, your video, not the
so this
poor
is
guy.
Like,
yeah,
poor guy, because he's like, oh man, that's my knife. But you know, here's what I took away from this. I took away that you know, you can get really deep into any project and hours, maybe days even, and have to abandon the project because of an issue like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts, like it really sucks, because it feels like you've lost time, like you'll never get it back. The good news is that you're turning lemonade into lemons into lemonade. And
absolutely,
I love that, by the way, because, you know, I don't know if you watched a handle video that I prototyped a handle for the Revolution Grinder, but I poured like a custom epoxy handle, and I was running out of time. So it was kind of rushing, and I, you know, broke the handle mid shoot, and I did not have time to, you know, or I could have changed the handle material. I just didn't want to.
Right. I rolled with it completely. And that's, you have to, right? Like, I think that's people, I've had folks, you know, ask, like, why do you think you can just make so many things? Like, you just, you always seem to have ideas. And I always describe it as, I don't have ideas, I have failures, right? Yep. Yep. And I am constantly pushing for whatever I'm making to fail, because that's an iteration point, right?
Sure.
And if you can, if you can fail fast, then you can iterate more, you know? And so even when I used to run Maker Club at the boys' school, that's, the kids would all come in after a full day of school. We met at the end of the day, and, you know, we would talk for maybe 10 minutes before we started on a project or whatever it was. And the beginning of every year or every session or whatever, you know, if I had a new group of kids, I would say, you're in luck. School's over for the day. And your only job when you're here at Maker Club is to fail. Mm-hmm. And they would all look at you like, this guy's nuts, you know? But I think that's that failing fast and iterating, you see it probably most pervasive in software development these days, where agile development principles are moving everybody towards that type of approach, or have already moved people towards that type of an approach, to where you don't overbuild things and you deliver minimum viable products instead of Cadillacs, you know? And if somebody says, I need something to put my laptop on while I work, you don't give them a mechanical stand-up desk with pen holders and, you know, a pencil cup and a 6 drawers and a mirror behind it. No, you just, you give them a freaking table with 4 legs.
Right.
And then the next day they come back and say, hey, my pencil keeps rolling off the edge. You know, you're like, well, let me straighten up that other leg.
And I think that type of mentality is the at its core, the reason why anyone is a success.
Yeah.
Because they think that when there was a time in my life when I was younger and I failed a lot, because, you know, you're young, you don't really, you don't have those foundations of successes
right.
and from failure that you can lean on. And you don't, you really don't know, like, am I moving forward here, or am I just going to, am I going to throw it in the trash and stop doing what I'm doing? And I think, you know, as it depends on how you mature, you know, when you're, you know, a lot of people don't ever achieve this. They don't ever see this as a failure, as a win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the people that do at a younger age, they're the ones that are going to excel and excel fast. So I applaud your work. And by the way, the guy who made the Damascus, it can happen to anybody.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I'm sure he makes an awesome quality product. It's not
that. 100%.
Hey, it was what it was.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, having those failures and being able to have the mindset of, okay, this went wrong, what can I turn it into, is the difference between being a, you know, okay knife maker and, you know, a damn good knife maker. Not saying that I'm
you're
a damn good knife maker,
no,
or a maker in general.
You're right.
But, you know, being able to, I mean, the old adage is, or the old saying is, knife makers don't make mistakes. They make shorter knives.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So you just gotta, roll with those punches. It is what it is.
Yeah. Brian,
in woodworking, we just,
congrats, man.
Yeah.
Just pull up the board stretcher.
Not that you ever want a, you know, especially when you're, you know, making a video or any sort of content, not that you would ever want things to go wrong, but damn, does it make a more interesting video?
Oh,
totally.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
Right. So
yeah. I had somebody message me, or actually just write a comment on that handle that I made. And they were like, yeah, well, my OCD is going crazy over that last pin being way far to the right. And I was like, well, I broke the damn thing. And I was like, if you watch the video, you'll see. He watched the video and then he commented on YouTube and he's like, oh, I see what happened there. He's like, yeah, okay. Well, at least, you know, you got something out of it, you know, it still worked at the end of it, you know, but, so anyway, Ben, how you doing? And what do you have going on in your workshop? I've been seeing all kinds of great content being pumped out by you.
I've been pushing it out. Yeah. I've been back on the horse, you know?
I love it.
Man, I actually, it's kind of interesting because last night So my wife and boys are still off playing on the East Coast. They're rooting on the Pittsburgh Pirates today at the Pirates game. So they're having fun. But last night I had one of Jack's buddies over with his dad to turn some pens.
Nice.
Oh, interesting. So,
yeah, it was really fun. So my buddy Tony and his son Andrew came over, and Tony is just an incredible guy. He retired from military service. Oh, I guess he's in his 40s when he retired. He's not much older than that now. So Tony lives a pretty good life and helps out at the school every chance he gets and at the church and everything else. But he had turned in the past and wanted to kind of get his son exposed to it. And buying a lathe is kind of a big commitment. So I've been saying repeatedly, just come on over anytime, you know, come on over. So we finally put something together, and we went through the whole process and the rigmarole of getting a pen blank, you know, drilled out and getting the little tube you got to put in it, all in it and glued in and everything else. And we were getting right down to the nitty gritty of turning the first piece for the pen. And wouldn't you know it, it just, the glue just gave way and the whole pen just went kabooey. Right.
Another failure this week. Interesting. Yeah, okay. All right. Yep.
So three pieces flying on the floor, and poor Andrew, you know, little 11-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Just standing at the lathe looking at me like a lost dog, you know, like, what happened? He said, we can, you know, right away, we can still save it, right, Mr. Butler? We can still save it. I'm like, boy, I don't know, bud. So we turned a pen into a bowl, believe it or not.
What? Yeah. How is that possible?
And hold not on. The kind that Pickle Cutter.
Hey.
No, we what we did, and I apologize to him, because I'll shoulder that one. We were in a little bit of a hurry, so normally when I'm making
that's how
a pen,
all failures start, by the way.
That's
with
the
that
start
statement.
Of every failure story.
We were in a little bit of a rush, and then
instead of using epoxy like a normal pen maker, so you put these little brass tubes, basically you drill a hole through a rectangular block of wood, and then you slide a little brass tube in there. And that makes the inside stomach of the pen, right where you would put all the guts. And normally I'll epoxy that, because I have had this same failure in the past where I've tried like CA glue, you know, super glue. I've tried the E6000 glue. I've tried a number of different glues when I just didn't have any 5-minute epoxy sitting around. And I've had some failures in the past. So I told him that I personally will glue up a handful of pen blanks, and he can come on over next week and we'll do it all again.
There
and
we go.
And then I pulled out a milk crate full of walnut offcuts and said, let's make a bowl. So we had fun. Cool. We turned a little catch-all bowl and had a lot of fun, but got that going. And then I also, my post today was on the B cone handle, or potentially the B cone handle.
Yes, sir.
But, it's kind of cool. I've got an idea that I could pull it off perfectly and it still looks kind of weird. So that's, you know, how you have that in the back of your mind. Like, you could pull this whole thing off and it's still ugly as sin. What then? Well, we'll figure
that
out.
Well, luckily it's your knife. So if it looks ugly, then, you know.
Yeah, put a new handle on.
Right.
So playing around with that, and then still got the commissions cooking. So fireplace, cabinet, and river tables coming up. I'm thinking this weekend about, if my epoxy comes in, I'm thinking about making the first pours on that big old walnut slab. So that should be really cool. And that one's I'm going to make a video on that one.
Cool.
For sure. And I've been filming some videos too. So I've actually been shooting some videos.
Man, you're all over the place this week. That's awesome.
Shoehorning content into the you know, into the bucket, because you just never know when you might want to have that for a rainy day.
There you go. That's awesome.
Shoveling it in there.
Fantastic, Ben. Fantastic.
Yeah. So, Brian,
we are 40. Yes.
What do you ahead. What do you have going on in the shop this week?
Well, I have I've been packing a lot of orders. We sales have been fantastic. We have been just cranking out grinder kits. Now that the kit is pretty much complete, you know, you only really have to source the wheels, the motor, and the VFD. And by the way, we are quickly going to have I basically have a machine shop that's turning a whole bunch of sets of wheels for us. So we're going to have all the roller bearings will be included in the kit. And we're going to solely go with a 7-inch drive wheel, which is my preference. You know, they're hard to find and, you know, you can't get them. So through the Work For It podcast, believe it or not, I got a recommendation to a machine shop in Nebraska, and they're young guys. They've got a long history of working aluminum, making roller bearings. And one of the things I really liked about these guys was that I was able to send them all my files and my drawings. And I said to them, like, if you see anything that you could machine, let me know and give me an overall cost estimate. And then here's what they would cost. You know, if I were to just go buy these things, here's what they would cost. Mm-hmm. And I need them to be comparable so that if you make them, then we're not increasing the cost of the kit. You know, that's like really important to me. And they came back with a whole bunch of cool concepts and then a whole bunch of other neat things too that we're going to be adding to the grinder over the course of the next year. That will greatly increase its functionality. I'm super excited about it. Some really original things that we, you know,
iteration
when you
partners.
When you, yeah, that's basically it, because they're a job shop, right? They want to partner with people like me who are a company that is small, that generates a lot of flow of parts. Right now, even being as small as we are, we're able to, you know, provide them with a ton of work, you know, so. And then, by the way, all American made. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Yeah, everything that we source will be American made. And these grinders, probably 90% of everything on the grinder will be American made, except for the motor and the VFD. In fact, the VFD, the preferred VFD, is actually manufactured right near where I live. So. By a company called KB Electronics in just outside of Fort Lauderdale. So, you know, if you can find an American made motor, you'll pay a lot more for it. But you can definitely have an all American grinder made. Awesome stuff. So I've been doing that. I've been working closely with the machine shop there and partnering with them on a whole bunch of things. I've now switched away from plastic knobs to my all steel knobs. So we've got a couple of things in the works right now with, I have to remove the zinc coating from the bolts that are, that you weld onto the knobs. So I have, this is kind of sort of interesting.
Got to wipe your zinc off before you.
Yeah.
Before you weld them into place.
Yeah. You don't, here's the thing. People don't understand this, and maybe you should know this, is that when you weld anything with a zinc coating on it, there's potential for you to be poisoned when that happens.
It's nasty,
it's really bad for you. Here's the other thing, though. I do it all the frickin' time, okay? And I do and I do it all the time because I'm doing it in such small, you know, things that I, you know, when people say they get zinc poisoning from welding, it's because they welded, for 3 hours on a zinc, you know, zinc coat or whatever.
And they've welded for 3 hours for 50 years straight doing the same thing. Like, it's not, you don't get dosed once and die.
Exactly. But. So it's not good for you. And zinc contaminates the weld too. So you really don't want it in there. So here's the thing. Guess what? You know how you get rid of it? You soak the bolts in vinegar. It's as simple as
vinegar.
That.
So
vinegar overnight.
That's such
cool. Yeah.
Man, don't you already do that with practically everything anyway? So, I mean, it's just.
I practically, yes, exactly.
With your lunch.
There you go.
And I pull my beets and my eggs and my pickles out of there. But I actually have this huge plastic bin that's just filled with household vinegar. And I legit just throw every piece of steel in it. Like when I, after I heat treated the little kitchen scalpel, because it was covered in carbon, threw it in there. And the next day, you know, all that carbon is gone. You know, just stuff like that. It's like really easy to use. So here's how I came up with this. Like, how do you keep from losing like 10,000 bolts in a bucket of vinegar that's pitch black? I bought... No, you know what I bought? You know when you buy a bag of oranges at the grocery store
and they
come in that like polyethylene netting stuff?
Okay.
That is super inexpensive, by the way. So you can buy like 100 of them for like 10 bucks on Amazon. So
I was thinking like a screen double ply them. Screen door.
Well, I was thinking that too, but it has to be plastic because anything metal it'll eat it through. So polyethylene won't get affected by the acid. So I have like three bags of oranges in my vinegar tank right now, which is kind of cool.
Cool.
And then doing that and, you know, making these prototypes for the kitchen blades that we talked about earlier, you know, just silly stuff like that. And, you know, kind of just taking some time to enjoy the quiet because my boys are actually in Wisconsin right now. So they're gone. Cool. I'm pulling a Ben. My wife is here for another few days and then she leaves too. So we'll be full on bachelor. By the way. The live was super fun. We did a live every week. This Saturday, we're going to do another live at 7 o'clock Eastern time on Instagram.
Amen,
so
amen.
Jump in on that. We'll have to advertise it a little more, but it was really a great time.
So for me, this Friday, so tomorrow, wait, no, tomorrow? No. Once this is out. I have my cousins getting married. So my siblings are up from Nashville. So this Saturday, my brother might also join us on this live. He's the guy that I've made a bunch of knives for.
Yeah, the chef.
Yeah, chef down in Nashville. So
nice.
That would be interesting to hear his experience with your knives and such.
Yeah, for sure.
I have 100 questions I want to ask him.
Get those ready.
Doubt about it. So be sure to jump on.
Lives are really fun. And if folks have a chance to even just pop in for a bit, looking at the numbers, it's weird when you host a live because it always seems like there's only at most like 15 people, but then Instagram sends you these stats and they're like 100 people saw your live.
Right, so because people are jumping in, jumping out all the time.
Yeah, people come in and out all the time and the count doesn't keep up.
Here's my question. Do we want to continue doing them on Instagram? Did we want to move them over to Facebook? Did we come up to a consensus on that?
I don't know. I think Instagram is the easiest to go live
for sure.
On. I will say it. If we went live on the DIY Belt Grinders group, that might not be those guys are all like my crew, so they're going to join in and watch. I just don't know how easy it is for them to jump in. I'm open for experimentation. It would be kind of cool if we could do a live where we could like restream. If I can get my shit together and we could do the restream, you can actually stream to two sources at once.
Yeah.
So that would be,
I've done that. Cool. But I've done it with two devices, you know, it was just me. I did a Tandy Leather thing like that one time where they wanted me to stream to their Facebook and my Instagram. So I had one phone was Instagram and one was Facebook. It was really weird.
I have seen that done. There's like actual holders for phones where you can do multiple phones in one holder.
I saw those.
All right, well,
on two different things.
Lord,
so
I'm not going
I don't
there.
Think we're going to get that crazy.
I was going to say the plan is we're going to be drinking beer and wine and whatever else while we're doing this. Maybe not the making it
so
complicated.
I think that it also just has to be like what I like about the live too, and what I like about it on Instagram. Is like Brian, like you said, it's just so dead simple, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not any structured thing, you know? And like I always say in my stories, like, join us, you know?
Yeah.
We can have four people on. If somebody wants to hop on, just send us a request to join, and we'll make sure you know whose feed it's on or whatever. Yeah. I got access to something called badges on Instagram.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Still trying to figure out what the heck it all means. It seems strange, but it's basically like a tip jar for your live stream. Why people would be compelled to just give me money because I did a live, I don't quite get that. I think Instagram missed the mark there. So I will not try to guilt or shame or maybe even encourage anybody to pay me money through a live stream, but it just seems really, really sexual.
Well, have you checked out Ben's OnlyFans page?
Hey, there we go.
Yeah, Jesus. Look at that. Well, he's like doing woodworking perverse in his underwear and like, you know.
What kind of woodworking are you talking about there?
I'm like, man, I work the wood, baby.
He's working the wood.
Work the wood.
All right, all right. Speaking of working the wood, we are an hour into the podcast. And
holy,
you know what
already?
That means. Yo, we should, yeah, man. You better believe it, Brian. Why? You know what this means? It's dad joke time.
Hold on, hold on. Let me get warmed up on my trombone. I will do the said trombone.
Oh, yeah.
Go
baby.
Ahead and
all
talk
right.
about something else for a couple minutes.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
All right, all right, all right.
I love it.
All right, so while Brian's getting his trombone ready, he's greasing up his trombone, if you know what I mean. Real quick, I'd like to also go take a quick step backwards and briefly talk a little bit about this storm that was just off the coast of Florida. And
did
it
you
is
get
now,
anything from it?
We got a lot of rain and wind. And yeah. I did have we got some flooding here, so some water seeped into my shop. It's not a huge deal. It recessed away, it like went away real quick. But here's where I just took a quick look at the forecast. So anybody on the eastern seaboard, if you are in Georgia, you're getting pounded right now. South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, all the way up to Maine. And for our boy, Mr. Nick Tobin in New Brunswick, I believe that's where he is. You will have the same raindrops that were falling on us down here in Florida. They will be probably raining down upon you in the next few days or so. So just keep that in mind. Tropical storms typically are no big deal for Floridians because we are prepared for them. However, right. if you'll remember, like Hurricane Sandy, it really messed with the New England area and New York and New Jersey because they just simply don't have the preparation like we do or the equipment like we do to kind of keep that kind of thing at bay. So just keep that in mind. It's definitely going to be coming up through New York.
Coming
it looks like
way.
It's going to skirt right up there. So batten down the hatches, as they say.
Let's hear them dad jokes.
All right, you ready? All right, here we
yes,
go.
Yes, sir.
Did you guys hear about the restaurant on the moon?
No.
Great food. Not. It's great food, but no atmosphere. Yeah.
Nice.
See, now, if everybody buys one of these kitchen scalpels that we've made, these shop scalpels, we will be able to record that, and then you'll be able to hit a button, and it will actually be able to play back.
Could be your ringtone.
Exactly, exactly.
We need the dad joke theme song.
There we go.
I mean, at least the little drum, you know,
Yeah, exactly.
That would be fun. That would be definitely fun. So, all right. So anyhow, moving on with the show, I would like to real quick, just briefly chat about anybody that you have been recently following on the Work For It Project hashtag on Instagram. I don't know. I haven't looked at it. Have you guys taken a look to see?
Yeah, I actually saw one, Maximus Knives from Lufkin, L-U-F-K-N, so Lufkin, Texas. Yes. Looks like he was on Forge and Fire. He made this little cool, looks like a little Skinner knife. Has a cool little red G10, really thin liner between the steel of the bolster and this antler handle, which looks really cool.
Yeah, it's killer. Oh, nice. It's really killer. Yeah,
such a cool one.
Is that bolster, are you sure that's steel, or is that, does he
Maybe
say what
brass?
It is? It could be brass. Nickel.
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 Yep.
Nickel guard. There we go. All right. So, yeah.
That's great.
Very, very nice. And I don't know if you guys remember, but Maximus Knives was one of the guys who was commenting while we were doing our live on last Saturday.
Yep. Oh, really?
And he had the great idea that we would kind of do one segment on our podcast, and then it would be stay tuned for the Hustle and Grind podcast.
Yeah, buddy.
And I started thinking about that, and I was like, man, that's going to take some coordination. So we're definitely going to need to kind of be on the same
nice
page
thing
for
is
that.
They're in a studio.
Yeah. You know? I don't know if you guys were talking about it while I was off getting my trombone ready, but we had Jason from Hustle and Grind podcast on. Fantastic
so many
podcast.
Jokes.
Go
so
check
many
it out.
Jokes.
Yeah, you. This collaboration, we're going to do this multi-show type setup, is going to be a really cool situation. I like it.
Yeah. No, we didn't talk about. We didn't talk about that. We were talking about the storm while you went off because the storm's going to go up the coast. But you're right. The Hustle and Grind podcast. If you haven't heard it, you should go and listen to it. They've always got interesting guests and people calling in. I've been on the show. Brian's been on the show. And I would imagine, Ben, you'll probably get the call, the nod very soon.
Pretty soon, yeah. And,
At some point.
To go on there. Those guys, here's what's interesting about the Hustle and Grind podcast. They seem to be like two guys that shouldn't be good at doing podcasts.
You know.
But they really
but they're
are.
They're so good.
Like, I will
They're
admit,
so good at it.
I did not follow those guys until I started following the show. And then,
well, me neither. I didn't know they
when
existed.
When you guys were on the show, then I'm like, oh, man. And the one morning, I had them on, I had them in the queue forever, and they didn't come up to the, you know, I usually just go out in the shop, and whatever's at the top of the podcast list, I hit play, and away we go. Mm-hmm. So they didn't come up to the top for some reason. And then one day, I'm like, I'm going to go find, thought about it. I'm like, I'm going to go listen to one of their shows. And I was hooked. I was like, man, these guys are incredible.
But you have
that idea of who they are, you know, and it's like either older or younger, you know, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden you flip to Instagram and it's like, yep, not who I thought they were.
Yeah. And they, you know, they both
not
have
good,
really
not
good
bad,
radio
not,
voice. Just,
yeah. They
their,
do.
Great their voices are great. Their questions are great. They've got a really good sort of format for their show. I just really would love to help support their rise up and what they're doing. So, you know, go and listen to the Hustle and Grind podcast. They're just getting started. I think they're like 15 episodes in or something like that. So it's like really early in their game, which again is another reason why I'm so impressed with their stuff. So, and jumping back to the work for WFI project, by the way, Entiat River Forge. He's doing a bunch of really great stuff. I don't know if you follow him. Entiat is spelled ENTIAT_river_forge. And he's like, he makes his own tools. He built a revolution. He's one of these guys that loves to smoke cigars, drink whiskey, and make knives. Like, all around good guy.
The
like,
holy just, trinity right there.
You got that right, man. I mean, power tools, alcohol, and tobacco. I mean, these are like the holy trinity. And his work is really good. So go check out Entiat River Forge. And he did a really cool blue-handled kitchen knife. His logo is really cool, too. I don't know how he came up with that, but I mean, it's E, E, R and F, and they're all kind of like mixed merged, together,
right.
But you can tell they're different letters, and he puts them on his knives, and it's really good stuff. So
and
put
right under that post, he has this post where he just lays the blade of the knife up against this water bottle and just slices it right through as if it's not there. It's crazy.
I haven't watched that video yet. Here, I'm gonna watch.
Oh my gosh!
Now. I've got it muted so I can
look at just how sharp that thing must be. It's crazy.
Yeah, man. He's one of those guys that spends. Oh man, that is cool. Wow, that's very cool. And right to the left of that post on my screen, or under that post on my screen, is a post from our main man, Mr. Brigham Kindle. He bought in.
Life Talk.
Yes, all the time. He bought in to the Revolution Project and purchased a kit. In fact, his kit shipped today. So he, and it's funny because he used the Shopify ping system and he was messaging me through there. And when you message me through there, unless you give your name and information, I don't know who you are. So this person's messaging me and they're going like, hey, I really want to get some of those knobs. They're awesome, whatever. And I respond back. I'm like, you know, hey, they're still kind of in development, but I'll throw a bunch in a box for you, you know, when you order your kit.
Sure.
And then later I would find out that it was him. he never identified himself. And then he's like, thanks for the knobs. Thanks for the free knobs. I'm like, I would have given you the knobs anyway, but, you know, right. Hey, that's cool. You know, it's all good. So he's going to be building a Revolution. That'll be awesome to follow along with a nine-toed man who is building a 2x72 belt grinder. You do the math.
The circle
swimmer.
It's going
to be awesome. The circle swimmer, yes.
Yep.
Yes. And then there's some other cool stuff in here. Did you guys watch this carrot chopping video that Ben's Bites put up?
Oh, yeah. I commented on that. I think that's so where I first used my Lorena Bobbitt joke.
I love it, man. I love that he's experimenting with these S grinds.
Mm-hmm.
And just real quick about the S grind. It is really difficult to achieve.
I could see that. Obviously never tried it, but man, it looks hard as hell.
That's above my pay grade so far.
Yeah. And so Ben and I have been sort of working out a way to possibly do an S grind with a mill, because there's a couple of people on Instagram who are doing this, and they're using an end mill, and they're essentially creating if you have the right kind of mill, you can do this where you can tilt the head, so you're kind of working at an angle. Otherwise, you can shim your steel and you can do this, and you can put in an S grind that way, or you can do it the traditional way, which is using
by hand
a grinder. Yeah, so
right.
It's
you gotta have some brass cojones to do that.
You really do.
I tried it once and I had it shoot out of my hands, and I'm not doing it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the more difficult things to achieve
in
knife making.
You can be so practiced at it, and you just keep going and going, and you make one little hair of a mistake, and you just completely ruin the S grind, and I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
I like Spence, though, because he kind of left that S grind. It's still kind of like rough scratches on the inside of that S grind. And most people would say that looks kind of unprofessional, but I think it looks pretty dope. Like that's kind of a cool look.
We did talk a little bit about finishing that off, because let's just say you are successful, right? Let's say you make an S grind, you do it the right way, you don't grind through, you don't throw the blade, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got this concave surface that you now have to hand sand or finish.
Yeah.
In some way.
Well, that was my thought is like,
good luck.
You know, it looks pretty rough right now, and I couldn't think of a way to leave it rough and make it look finished.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I like Brian said, it does not bother me at all. In fact, I'm a big fan. Yeah. If you look at Pickle Cutter's work,
he
doesn't do any, he loves that 36 grit. You know, VSM belt that he uses, and he leaves the grind lines in there, and I think it's kind of sexy. It's kind of artsy. It looks good. You know, gives another spot for food release. And the downside is, if it's high carbon, those areas have a tendency to corrode faster,
right?
Because moisture can wick down into those spots.
Right.
Sure. So that is definitely a technical issue. I will say, if you keep your knives oiled, not a big deal. You know,
Yeah. Or if you do some sort of a patina on there, like a force patina to try to mitigate that a little bit, but yeah.
How are you doing your force patinas? Are you like in the mustard camp or the instant coffee?
I'm actually, I'm experimenting it with this batch of knives. So I've made a few knives for myself for the kitchen in the new apartment. In the past, I've done a ferric chloride etch and then a coffee etch. Obviously, you're doing a lot of, you know, neutralizing between to try to keep that ferric chloride from, you know, leaching into whatever the hell you're cutting. But this one, I'm going to do a coffee etch for probably like 2 days or so, and then try to buff that back and then do like a mustard or I don't know. I'm going to try to experiment with it and kind of see what comes out, but I'm thinking I'm going to try to do like a coffee etch and then a mustard patina.
So, So here's for the longest time, I was always against a forced patina. And the reason was, unless it's Damascus, of course, but if it's like, say, mono steel, I never really fully understood why anybody would want to put a patina on a knife that would wear away. Because, you know, a lot of times if you're cleaning it, Scotch-Brite will take it off, whatever. Mm-hmm. I heard Jeff Vader explain it one time, and it changed my mind. So how he sees a forced patina, and I totally agree with this now that I understand it more, is that you're setting the stage for the lifelong patina that the knife is going to achieve over the course of its life. Because, for instance, like I have a lot of knives on my monosteel, high carbon knives on my rack that I use on the regular, and he's absolutely right. They get patinaed where they're being used. So you get
one's
like these.
Out, one's yes.
If you do a forced patina, it sort of blends that entire.
Right. For sure.
You know, look. So I'm now in the camp where I think that if you're doing high carbon steels, you should be doing a forced patina initially just so you're setting the stage for that. And that was a really great way that Jeff put that, because I was like, well, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just let it naturally patina over time? And then, of course, until you've had a knife for a year or more, you don't really see it. So, you know,
people want the boots. People want boots that look worn in the day they get them.
Right.
You know,
that's
the
reason.
Want, stiff leather and. Yeah.
The reason why I always go with a forced patina now is because one of the first culinary knives, I made a nikiri for a local person, and she loved it. It was perfect. She wanted it to look really rustic, so I left the regular flat finish on it, and she used it for probably 5 or 6 months and then brought it back to me, and there's little itty-bitty dots of, you know, little rusted areas. And that was specifically, you know, obviously where she was cutting, it was very well patinaed and it looked fantastic. But all of the rest of the bare metal, just on a humid day, it would pick up just a little bit of moisture and it would generate just a little fine little hint of a rust. So I feel like, you know, putting on that forced patina allows the rest of that metal, the rest of that knife to, you know, be a little bit protected from that little bit of moisture, because honestly, you know, it's might as well be protected from that little bit. I mean, of course it's not going to look as sexy as a nice, you know, shiny new blade, but I mean, it's high carbon. It's what it's going to be in a year anyway. So you might as well start off with that finish.
Yep. I'm with you there. Yeah. It makes sense. Go ahead.
What percent of people that you guys encounter, are familiar with high carbon steels versus not? You know, do you find yourselves having to educate pretty heavily on that? Or,
I mean, I bring it up every single time, and just, I mean, any sort of chef will already know ahead of time. But you know, it doesn't hurt to just kind of put in there, you know, a little disclaimer.
I've heard some people say they've really had to, you know, really had to educate and explain, like, you know, it's not going to be your shiny Henkel's knife in the block, you know, or whatever brand they sell at Bed Bath and Beyond or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, I am out in the camp now where I'm working with more stainless steels. So because of this exact problem is where, you know, you're having to have a conversation with somebody about it, and they're not paying attention to you and not really listening. And then, you know, down the road, they're throwing their knives in the dishwasher, they're leaving it in the sink, they're cutting a tomato or a lime or something very acidic, and then it's got a rust mark on it, and now you're reworking the knife. And I just, I will say, I love high carbon steel because I know how to take care of it. It holds an edge better, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, I just think I get more out of a high carbon steel knife. But there is that headache where I feel like I have to babysit my kids, and you know, if they're using the knives, I'm like, you know, if I walk into the kitchen and one of my knives is sitting in the sink, it's just like, it definitely does happen. And if it's happening to me, it means it's happening to my customers. So it's important that, you know, hey, look, let's, you know, try to, you know, make sure the people are properly educated, but also start, you know, again, AEBL is an awesome steel. It's an awesome stainless
steel.
It's easy to work with.
A lot of times I'll just send Craig's from Chop Knives and, of course, Knife Talk. I'll just send that video that he made all about the high carbon steel and kind of explaining it. If a customer has real questions about it, I'll just send a link to that YouTube video, because that he does a really good job on it, kind of explaining the differences.
Yeah, that video is really great, and you're right about that. And then also having a little document that goes along with the knife. And I just put right in there, like, if you leave any food on this, it will corrode. If you leave it in the sink, it will corrode. You know, and I highlight and make those words bold. It will corrode. You know, feel free to send it back to me, but then you won't have your knife for a few weeks. But
I've been handwriting that message most of the times. I probably should put together some sort of like a business card with all that information on it or something.
I've got a little slip I put in with a cutting board usually that, you know, talks about what I put on it. And then for a while there, I actually had little plastic containers, and I put a little bit of the like wood butter stuff in it and give them a little container, you know, because sometimes you'd ship a board somewhere, and just that process of, you know, being in a hot plane or a cold plane or whatever the heck it was delivering around the country, it would dry the boards out. So they would sometimes get to the client and they'd be, you know, they a little lackluster. And I had a thing, you know, like, don't, you know, no cause for alarm. Don't worry. It'll be sexy in a minute, you know. Just rub a little oil on it, baby.
Rub a little dirt on it. It'll turn out just fine. It'll turn out just fine. Speaking of patina, real quick, do you guys know who Jeremy Sears is? He's a YouTuber.
Name rings a bell.
So he's got a big, long beard. What happened to Jeremy?
Yeah, he's been around. Now he's still making content. He's doing great. He's a full-time YouTuber. I think he's got over 300,000 subs now or more.
Now,
I mean, I don't know. I haven't
checked. The podcast. He does Simple Little Life podcast. Oh, or did.
No. That's
different
Jeremy.
Sorry.
That's Jeremy Gerst. Yeah. That's Simple Little Life. So Jeremy Sears. Yeah. Different Jeremy. Sorry, Jeremy Sears. He's another Floridian like me. And his channel is really great. It's just his name, Jeremy Sears, and I think it's spelled S-I-E-R-S. So S-I-E-R-S. And if you go on his channel and look at a lot of his content, it's, how do I say this without sounding like I'm being an asshole, but it's, I really love his content, but it's a lot of it is very like product oriented. So he like does a lot of beard oils, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's like a whole bunch of dudes that are like really into like maintaining their appearance, which I am as well. Nobody take this the wrong way, but there's like a lot of guys who are buying oils and creams,
man,
and shavers.
All I'm saying is I'm one of those guys. I normally, before we wore masks, I used to put a little bit of beard oil in every morning. It just kind of makes your beard feel, you know, a little less.
I got to tell you, Brian, your beard definitely definitely You've is got one of the top beard, beards. Man. You do definitely have a really
golden
cool beard.
Locks.
Yeah.
And so does Jeremy, by the way. He's got this big, long, like ZZ Top style beard.
Yeah. I just subscribed to him. Holy cow. Yeah. It looks like he has a really high production setup here. I like it.
Dude, his content is, yes, it's beautiful. He spends so much time doing his stuff. And you know, he does whiskey reviews and knife reviews and, like, you know, all this great stuff. It's basically what he has, like, a Tuesday segment called Man Shit Tuesdays, where he just does, like, all man stuff, cigars, you know, that whole thing. And he's got shirts out that they just say patina, patina, patina. And he is always pushing for, you know, these artisans, these makers, these people that are making handmade anything. Mm-hmm. One of his last pieces of content was all about the different grades of leather. And he interviews a guy out in Hawaii who makes leather wallets and leather goods, but wallets primarily. And the educational component of this, I had no idea about the different grades of leather, genuine versus top versus full versus veg tan versus
all. It's deep. And,
it gets
and
really
not only
deep.
Is it deep, it's like ancient too.
Yeah.
You know, like that shit's been around,
man,
since God was a boy.
If
you
talk to someone who's at all into that type of stuff, like my local leather guy who makes all my sheaths, just like I can blab about knives for hours on end, he can go right talk down the leather. Rabbit hole all about that leather. It's so interesting.
It's an easy, in my opinion, it's a very easy rabbit hole to fall down into. And I damn near did. Came very close to falling into that. There is something about, you get the same fix as like woodwork or metalwork, because you're combining pieces, you're combining materials. Like making a leather wallet is not much different than making a cabinet or a box or a, you know, like inherently there are so many transferable skills. The beauty and the difference is that when you're working with leather, it's clean, it's comfortable.
Yes.
It smells great. Mm-hmm. It looks
it's usually
good.
Smaller, you know,
chicks
unless you're making saddles or something.
Right. Like you got all these things that bother you about the other shit, and leather just erased it. I'm like, I could really get into this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just so we don't get too far on a tangent, but on that note, I think everyone should go watch Jeremy. Not that he needs it, but you should go and watch his channel, because you're not going to like everything. I mean, all his content goes in 10 different directions sometimes, but it's always really well organized. And, you know, but there's certain stuff like he'll do like a review on an espresso maker, you know, stuff like that. It's just but he gets a lot of sponsors. And here's the thing about Jeremy. I have a ton of respect for him as a human being. And the reason is because he's so transparent with his work.
Mm-hmm.
He talks a lot about his journey with YouTube and social media and quitting his day job and doing content full time and getting sponsorships and making money, because in his world on YouTube, and Brian, you'll learn this the more you do YouTube, is there's something called RPM, and it's how that equates to how much money you actually make from ad revenue per 1,000 views.
Okay. I'm nowhere near thinking about that yet.
Yeah. You've got a ways to go. And so do I. And here's the thing, even with like 41,000 subscribers I have, my RPM is this number is tied to each one of those views. And that RPM changes based upon the criteria of your channel. So knives, anything related to
blades,
vices, like knives, cigars, whiskey, guns, anything really super low. Vlogging, it's like it basically pays like $2 a 1,000 views. I mean, it's like nothing. But
you
so in his in
makers,
his world,
I was hit by your sharp things thing today. Talk about that next.
Yeah, and that's the reason why, because they don't want to promote people who are doing things that could be, you know, non-advertiser friendly. So in his world, you know, his RPMs are really low, okay? And there's another thing called a CPM, which we'll get into in another time, but the RPM is the actual dollar amount that you get. And so he has to leverage subscribers, advertisers. You know, he has to bring people into his channel. He has to talk with them, and they sponsor his, each individual video is sponsored by like a maker or whatever. Tons of respect for Jeremy. Go check him out. I think it's, it would, if you don't already know who he is, go look at his stuff and just kind of binge watch. I really love his content. I, at some point I'd love to get him on the podcast because he's just such a,
speaking of his subscribers, he is right now at 398,000 subscribers. So we need to jump him up over that 400 mark. Let's do it. Everyone go subscribe. Let's get him over it. Come on.
Yeah, if you subscribe to his channel, make sure you comment on one of his videos, send him a message, and tell him that you found him through the Work For It podcast and that you would love to hear him on the Work For It podcast.
Yes, sir.
And he is close to me. He's in St. Augustine. So, yeah, he's he would be somebody I could maybe go and you know, hang out with and do some content with at some point.
Seems like the kind of guy, you know, we've all had like that uncle or that guy growing up that just enjoyed life.
Yes.
Period. Mm-hmm. You know, that didn't, you know, that worked and worked hard, but it was a totally different kind of work than anybody could ever comprehend, right? And it only led to more enjoyment, not more work.
Yeah. You could tell he loves what he does. And that's that's the the key to true success, in my opinion, is being able to do whatever you want with your time, whenever you want, and you should enjoy that time. And that's the true gauge for success.
I mean, isn't that what all of us want to do? I mean, that's the perfect life right there.
And how do you achieve that, Brian? What do you got to do?
You work for it.
You got to work for it, baby. Yes, sir. That's right. Yeah, I love it. All right. On that note, I am going to shut down the show. Thank you to all of our patrons and everyone who has been listening to the Work For It podcast. We truly, truly appreciate your support in whatever that methodology is, whether you support us on Patreon for as little as $1 a month, whether or not you buy one of these cool shop scalpels that we're making, or whether or not you just listen and share and like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, social media channels like Instagram and Facebook, and the Work For It podcast on any major platform out there. Thanks again, guys. We truly appreciate you. My name is Brian House, and this has been the Work For It podcast.
See y'all later.
Yeah.
Another great show. See you later. Guys.
Goodbye. All right. Goodbye. Catch you up later. Goodbye. All right. Goodbye. We'll see.
Goodbye.
Ben is going to go back to his meth lab now and continue his
testing.
See
you later, fuckers.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.